Restoration, written by Rose Tremaine and read by Paul Daneman.
Part 1, Chapter 1, The Five Beginnings. I am, I discover, a very untidy man. Look at me. Without my periwig, I am an affront to neatness. My hair, what is left of it, is the colour of sand and wiry as hog's bristles. My ears are of uneven size. My forehead is splattered with freckles. My nose, which of course my wig can't conceal, however low I wear it, is unceremoniously flat, as if it had been hit at birth. Was I hit at birth? I do not believe so, as my parents were gentle and kindly people, but I will never know now. They died in a fire in 1662. My father had a nose like a Roman emperor. This straight, fierce nose would neaten up my face, but alas, I don't possess it. Perhaps I am not my father's child. I am erratic, immoderate, greedy, boastful, and sad. Perhaps I am the son of Amos Treefeller, the old man who made head moulds for my father's millinery work. Like him, I am fond of the feel of objects made of polished wood. My telescope, for instance. For I admit, I find greater order restored to my brain from the placing of my hands round this instrument of science than from what its lenses reveal to my eye. The stars are too numerous and too distant to restore to me anything but a terror at my own insignificance. I don't know whether you can imagine me yet. I am 37 years old, as this year, 1664, moves towards its end. My stomach is large and also freckled, although it has seldom been exposed to the sun. It looks as if a flight of minute moths had landed on it in the night. I am not tall, but this is the age of the high heel. I strive to be particular about my clothes, but am terribly in the habit of dropping morsels of dinner on them. My eyes are blue and limpid. In childhood, I was considered angelic and was frequently buttoned inside a suit of blue moiré, thus seeming to my mother a little world entire, sea and sand in my colours, and the lightness of air in my baby voice. She went to her fiery death still believing that I was a person of honour. In the scented gloom of Amos Treefeller's back room, the place of all our private conversations, she would take my hand and whisper her hopes for my splendid future. What she couldn't see, and what I had not the heart to point out, was that we no longer live in an honourable age. What has dawned instead is the age of possibility. And it is only the elderly, as my mother was, and the truculently myopic, as my friend Pierce is, who haven't noticed this and are not preparing to take full advantage of it. Pierce, I am ashamed to admit, fails to understand, let alone laugh at, the jokes from court I feel obliged to relay to him on his occasional visits to me from his damp Fenland house. The excuse he makes is that he's a Quaker. This, in turn, makes me laugh. So, to me again, whither my thoughts are extremely fond of returning. My name is Robert Merivale, and although I'm dissatisfied with other of my appendages, viz. My flat nose, I am exceedingly happy with my name, because to its Frenchness I owe a great deal of my fortune. Since the return of the king, French things are in fashion, heels, mirrors, sedan chairs, silver toothbrushes, fans and fricassees, and names. In the hope of some preferment, a near neighbour of mine in Norfolk, James Gourlay, an ugly, rather disgusting person, as it happens, has inserted a D into his otherwise Scottish-sounding name. So far, the only reward to come to the pompous de Gourlay is that a French wit at my dinner table dubbed him Monsieur Dégueulasse. We giggled a great deal at this. And some new scarlet breeches of mine were stained with the mouthful of raisin pudding I was forced to spit out in my attack of mirth. So this is how you might imagine me, at table, rustling with laughter in a gaudy suit, my migrant hair flattened by a luxuriant wig, my freckles powdered, my eyes twinkling in the candlelight, my pudding being ejected from my mouth by that force within me which snorts at sobriety and is so greedy for foolishness.